Everything that's ever happened to me in my life that's been bad has always been my fault.
I'm here today with Matt Gerlach. You're a transformative entrepreneur and mentor who mastered the art of turning inward struggles into outward success.
What we understand now is that there is generational trauma. Like, your trauma left unhealed is really just going to be passed down to your kids. I think that you have to teach teenagers independence and responsibility. The level of responsibility that I've had to have when I was suffering so bad with these panic attacks, and I'd like to be a lot more generous because of it, because I know how it's made me feel when I've come across somebody that's been extremely generous to me.
You're listening to the Real Business Connections Network.
Real Business Connections Network.
Powered by Balbert Marketing LLC. Subscribe now and check us out at realbusinessconnections.com. Enjoy the show.
Welcome, everyone, once again to Learn, Speak, Teach on the Real Business Connections Network. I'm here today with a new friend, a fast friend, really, Matt Gerlach. Matt, what's happening, man?
Doing very well. So good to be here with you. Thank you for having me today.
I'm excited. I joked before in the proverbial green room that, you know, if I have a huge name guest, I'll try to put together specific questions. I don't think you're a huge name yet, and that's the beauty in it. I came with a blank sheet of paper because I'm mesmerized and I'm fascinated by your story. I think you're quote unquote the next best secret. And I just hope to give an opportunity to tell that story and, you know, glean some insights from it. So if that's cool with you, that's the plan today, my friend.
Yeah, I'd love that. Thank you for your interest in my story.
I will give the bird's eye view with the quick bio to bring the listener into our world. And then ultimately we'll go deep, but you're a transformative entrepreneur and mentor who mastered the art of turning inward struggles into outward success. Having navigated his own journey from anxiety and self-doubt to fulfillment and abundance, Matt now leads others through programs like the Abundance Activation Mastermind, teaching folks to find joy, set boundaries, and listen to themselves. As a self-made millionaire and owner of a thriving consulting firm, Matt combines his business acumen with profound professional insights, guiding individuals towards both emotional and financial abundance. Matt's life story is a testament to the power of self-discovery and authentic living. Did we miss anything? I used ChatGPT to help put that together for me, so...
Ben, that was great. It's a nice nutshell of what I've accomplished over the past several years on my healing journey. Should I go right in and tell you and your audience how I got here?
Yeah, it's funny because I asked, did we miss something? We missed a lot, because I think it is fair to assume that you didn't just roll out of bed a millionaire. You didn't just roll out of bed healed from all your traumas. Start us off. Where did this all begin?
Wow. So in 2017, I was living in Manhattan, New York City, and I had just started a consulting business. I randomly fell into this very niche market in 2010 when I moved to New York into baby products, high-end baby products like luxury baby blankets and just normal consumables that you would use with your babies. So I started this consulting business, and I've spent the past 14 years in this niche market. And when I started my business, I was shocked with what I found. I started having anxiety. I didn't know it was anxiety at the time. I started having physical health problems is what happened. I was diagnosed with high blood pressure, and it wasn't that bad, to be honest, but I obsessed about it like crazy. I was in the doctor's office every week, so panicked about it. And then my partner and I were moving to Los Angeles at the time. I didn't really know any other way than to push for success. I immediately got clients on. My first month, I made like 10,000 bucks probably. Third month, I was making 20,000 bucks a month already. And I was just absolutely killing myself. I was drinking quite a bit. That was part of my That was part of my offer to my clients. I took people out to drinks and dinners all the time. And when I was struggling with any sort of mental blocks, I, you know, would be happy to have a glass of wine at night to get through it. And, or, I mean, more than a glass of wine at night. I was smoking cigarettes at the time. And then we moved to LA. My partner and I, we relocated. And my first night in LA, I thought I was having a heart attack. And I went to the emergency room and they kept me overnight thinking I was possibly having a heart attack. So he went home and I stayed in the hospital alone. My family was about, my blood family lives about 30 miles away from Cedars-Sinai, and I didn't call them. It's weird going back in hindsight, I was very clear that I didn't want to call them. And it was because everything that's ever happened to me in my life that's been bad has always been my fault. I definitely think that we shouldn't look away from ourselves. We do a lot of things that cause ourselves pain, but it was more than that. It was like there wasn't ever room for mistakes growing up, and it was just always my fault. There was no one to help. I mean, if I got in trouble, it was my way, it was my role to figure out how to get out of trouble. And I was already in trouble. I was in the hospital and I just didn't need any other fingers pointed at me. So I got out and, you know, I had a mountain of discharge paperwork. It was seeing a cardiologist, an addiction specialist, psychologist, of course, primary care physician, a head and neck surgeon, because I thought I was having breathing issues, which looking back were absolutely anxiety. And I started this healing journey where I became a yoga teacher. I always did yoga and that helped. So this healing journey found the holistic path pretty quick. And that really has been a huge part of my journey. So I became a yoga teacher. I started with somatic therapy. In addition to regular therapy, I was doing this neurofeedback therapy, just really convinced for about a year that something was wrong with me physically. I started having panic attacks about 9 months after getting out of the hospital. And I was on the freeway coming home from San Diego, and I thought I had a brain tumor and was dying. And that was the end of driving for about 2 years. I could not drive on the freeway for about 2 years. I tried here and there, and, you know, I kept pushing. I mean, that's really, I think, what is unique about my journey is like, just failure wasn't an option. I stayed just north of rock bottom so I could keep pushing. And it got so bad. I mean, I could barely drive on the streets. 90% of the time I was taking an Uber to the doctor's office and to the gym, to yoga teacher training. I guess I really didn't tell people how bad it was. My partner knew how bad it was. And, you know, I mean, he was there for me, but I think that everyone sort of, or not everybody, but I think he knew it was anxiety and I wasn't dying the way that I thought I was. Anyhow, so fast forward a little bit, I get to a neurologist finally, and the neurologist is like, Matt, get out of here. I've seen this. He was the meanest guy ever, but he's like, Matt, get out of here. You know, I never want to see you again. This is anxiety. I've seen this a million times. Don't come back. I was like, okay, cool. You know, I mean, I'm not dying, but now what do I do? And my journey led me to more therapy, more talk therapy. My partner and I ended up in couples therapy, which I think is fantastic, by the way, for anybody who's in a relationship that they care about, because it really helped us in a lot of ways. What happened during a couples therapy session was we realized that I was not able to ask him for something that I needed. It was just like around weekend plans. I was like, I don't want to do this, but I couldn't ask for it. And we all had a breakthrough. Like my therapist was, or our therapist was shocked. She was like, oh my God, you know, like this is what's going on. You don't think your needs are important. You don't like your needs. And a few days later, I saw my family. I thought, you know, everyone would want to heal. And I went about like expressing my needs in a way that probably wasn't very effective, but the way it was responded to is certainly not effective either. And we went about 3 years without really talking. COVID happened during this. I didn't really have a relationship with my family during that time. And it was honestly, it was painful, beyond painful, but it was probably the most necessary thing that's ever happened to me in my life. My business was still going, and I was driving this towards success in a massive way. I was creating massive impact for my clients, treating these businesses like they were my own, which I just looking at what I did for them, and good for them. I mean, there's no animosity whatsoever at all. I'm glad I was able to serve, but I treated these businesses like it was my own. And internally, I could feel the resentment building and just like, I wasn't getting paid enough for it. So I found this coach. I had no idea what I would end up with. And this woman just changed my life. She ended up, she was an executive for Ray Dalio from Bridgewater Capital, and just like took me under her wing and just really helped me advocate for my worth. I remember asking her once, like, can I talk to you about depression? And she was like, oh my God, Matt. She's like, I'm a human. Yes. You know, I mean, so she really helped me see this. And I went on this healing journey and just admitted my feelings to myself, and I had a traumatic childhood. There was a lot that happened at home that shouldn't have. There was a lot that happened outside of the home that shouldn't have. I was abandoned or ditched by my group of friends in fifth grade, and I had not a single friend for almost 4 years. I don't think anybody really knew that that's what was going on. And I just kept us all in, you know, and managed through my 20s by drinking and, you know, smoking cigarettes and keeping busy. And these wake-up calls were happening. I'm a big Oprah person, and she says, you know, it's one of her biggest wisdoms is the wake-up calls will keep happening until you listen. And it's just, you know, the sooner you listen, the better it is. So I drove this business to success. I ended up making $1 million a year as a solopreneur. I have one person that supports me on my team. That's my employee, but I drove it to success out of scarcity. I thought that I was going to die or thought that I needed serious rehabilitation, and just kept pushing towards success so I'd have enough money to pay for recovery. And I didn't need recovery to that extent. And through the process, I learned to love myself. I learned to love my needs. I learned to vocalize my needs. I learned that there's a lot that I can't change, and it's not my problem to just let things go, do my best. I'm a completely different person now from this. I don't have anxiety or depression. I am in the midst of some, you know, career changes, and like, I'm like, who is this person? I'm just cool as a cucumber about the whole thing. And I found spirituality. I believe in a higher power for sure. And I just, you know, like when the problems get really big, they say, give them to God. And I always even thought that was selfish. And now it's like, I go to bed every night and just give it to God, you know? And anyways, I want to give you a chance to speak. I talked for a bit, but that's the journey in a nutshell.
I'm loving it. And well, I have a lot of questions, but one thing I want to focus on is I think it's an interesting dissonance that you're making money because you want to be able to afford a treatment, but the treatment's being caused by the thing that's making you the money. So it's like you're trying to solve a problem with the problem. When did you realize that what was happening wasn't going to be sustainable? Like you mentioned your healing journey, but did you have one or a series of— it's not always just one moment. I know for me, it was a series of moments. Did you have a moment or a series of moments that were those light bulbs? What did you say? What does Oprah call them again? Tell me, please.
Wake up calls.
Tell me about the wake up calls.
You know, first of all, I understand the irony of this. And yes, it's quite comical now that I did this, but it's a sign of trauma. You know, I mean, it's like, I mean, this is what you do. You're insane. I mean, you're not insane, but you're going about a goal in an insane way, you know? And it's crazy that that's what I legitimately remember thinking of, like this treatment center on the beach. And it wasn't like— it was just a rehabilitation from Life Center. And I remember just thinking like, God, if I can just get another $100,000 in my savings account, that'll probably be enough to pay for 6 months of this. you know, there's nowhere to go for help. I don't want to lose my home. And yeah, in terms of your question about these, about the moment, I don't really, there wasn't any aha moment where I realized, oh my gosh, I'm doing this to myself. Mm. It was more of a hindsight as 2020. I just had so much support around. I had my therapist who was really good, my coach. I had another coach, this somatic therapist that really changed my life in so many ways. You know, what I needed, I think the aha moments or the wake-up calls along the way, it really came in the form of validation. Mm. And I think that the traditional therapy is kind of like, I don't know, how do you feel about that? And not all therapy, but like, I didn't need any more of that. What I needed was someone to say like, holy heck, Matt, like what happened? Like you had no friends for 4 years. That in and of itself would have made somebody like lose their minds, you know? And the situation with me, like at home, there was a lot of love at home and there was a lot of, it was really hard to like want to think that things shouldn't have happened. You don't know any better, you know? And it's like, that was, I think, really the journey that I needed to be on or that I was on. And that was what was happening along the ways. It was like, more like, I feel so like I'd be talking to a coach or a therapist and saying, I feel so helpless. Or I feel so, I mean, I was suicidal for part of this. Like, you know, my partner and I would get in a, not even an argument, but like a disagreement, a healthy disagreement. I've learned that those exist. I didn't know that. And I remember one night, like we had a disagreement. It wasn't even bad. And I was like, oh my God, I had to tell him. I was like, I'm really worried I might hurt myself tonight because it was like along the way, I started to see, like, I mean, back to what I said, I always thought that if something happened, it was my fault. It was always my fault.
Right.
And I guess I was starting to open up and to see like, oh, like this is most of the time it's no one's fault in the first place. And sometimes it's not my fault. Sometimes it is somebody else's fault. Hmm. And I would have these episodes, these fits like that. And then I would work through them with a therapist or a coach. And the more that I like saw how bringing light to the problem or validation to it, the more that I could feel the relief from that, that yeah. was like the more that I was like, oh, there's more here that needs to be uncovered. And, but no, it's really a hindsight is 2020 type thing. Like, oh, it's all so simple. Like I couldn't set boundaries because I never knew how to set boundaries. Like, but it wasn't like I was in this and like, oh, I see what's going on. Now I'm going to like ask for help specifically for that. It was like, I had the help around me and was so vulnerable and open to the feedback that I was consistently growing along the way.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm a firm believer that that growth is sometimes forced and the path doesn't always go the way you expect it to, but all those decisions are in preparation for who you get to become today. And I'm wondering, because you've went through a pretty major transformation in a short period of time, like when did you start realizing that things could be different? When did, I know you're doing yoga, you're doing somatics, you're speaking, you know, with therapists, you're doing therapy, you're doing a lot of these things, you're habit stacking all these good things, but when did it actually start working for you? Because I know personally, I've done a lot of good things and gotten zero results. So you must have done something. I don't know. Maybe it was a mindset shift. You tell me.
You, the multiple choice question worked. It was yoga. I mean, it was absolutely yoga. I had this yoga teacher who I started yoga teacher training with. And this woman came into my life. I mean, I love her more than almost anybody in the world. And, it's very special too, because she's not really doing teacher training like this anymore. So I found her at a time in her life, talk about synchronicity, you know, just where she was giving this kind of intimate mentorship to people, but sitting in a room of people, like therapy was like helpful, like, okay, something's going on. I was fine talking about things, but it was really sitting in community with other people that I was able to see other people with their hard feelings, see them cry, and to really realize I wasn't alone. I guess that even though I was having all these problems, I still always felt like I was alone. And I was born like a highly sensitive person, I'm quite certain, you know, and I'm proud of that, to be clear.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was like seeing all these other beautiful yoga students in this room and like seeing them all. And someone's a personal trainer, someone's a technician somewhere. And it's like all of us that like have such different external lives internally. I saw that we all suffered some sort of trauma that we were debilitated by, and it became so normal to let people in and really to not have shame. I mean, I found Brené Brown on this journey. She was the first author that I really learned from. And I learned that like deep down, like I was just like overflowing in shame.
Sure. I know the feeling. I mean, if you think everything's your fault, it's an interesting thing because there's taking ownership, taking responsibility for circumstances, but blaming and shaming yourself isn't necessarily responsibility for it, is it? It's more just guilt and shame and anxiety. And we can't change the past is my point here, but we can take responsibility for what we're going to do in the future. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I have two things about that. First of all, I don't believe any child at 10 years old is responsible for their actions fully. Mm. I think that almost all of us in our generation would have, I think all of our parents have done something to us that you would not do to a child today, that they would not. Like if I had kids and did some of the stuff that parents of my parents' generation did, they would call the police on it probably too. You know, and what I would say was probably the biggest culprit to my I want to say demise. that's a dramatic word, but sure. Like I needed help during school. I mean, I'm gay, and I remember feelings when I was 10, 8 years old, but I mean, there was way bigger fish to fry than my identity. I mean, I was just trying to survive. But like I was acting out very badly, and I know that. So I take responsibility for that. But like I'm a 10-year-old with no agency acting out. Like, how do I help myself? You know, and I remember crying and having like my face grabbed and like, don't cry, you know, and things like that, where like, you know, you're not allowed to like express emotions like that. And I remember I could feel it in my throat. Like, I mean, I can still remember that feeling, like in my throat, just like where your tears are like bypassing your cheeks and just like going down your throat. And no 10-year-old deserves that. You wouldn't you have no agency at 10 years old. When you're 14 years old and like smoking cigarettes behind the school, yeah, I mean, don't be an idiot. But like, and also, I mean, you know, like I was thinking about this a lot. Like I don't have any, I'm so grateful for my journey. I believe that people who went through adversity, like they're the people that changed the world. I mean, I haven't had anything horrible happen to me. So like I might have a different story if something serious did. And that's not funny. I'm just like, it is, yeah. Like my story is not in the big scheme of things. Like I'm very fortunate that I survived that isolation. But I think what do they say? Like more cancer survivors like are grateful for it than not, or something like that, because it wakes them up to life, you know. And I wouldn't have the appreciation for life that I have now if I hadn't been worried about taking my own not that long ago.
Yeah. And I give you permission, don't downplay it. Most of us haven't had big T, massive traumas that, you know, you put on a piece of paper and it's like, oh my God. Like, but most of us have at some point considered harming ourselves. Most of us have drank too much, made poor decisions, weren't under, like, the childhood thing really spoke to me, because you're just trying to figure out how to get through in this world. You're not thinking about your identity, what you're passionate about, your career, your value system. You're just trying to figure out how to live your life. And then if you don't have a support system that can amplify and let you live your life, it's got to be difficult. I guess the big question, though, is with all the learnings, would you go back and change all that? Are you grateful for it? Are you still kind of indecisive? I'm giving you the multiple choice. I thought that was a funny comment. But, like, would you go back and change it?
I think the only piece of my journey, you know, I mean, I think that, like, nobody wants to be anything other than amazing to their kids. And I think that what we understand now is that there is generational trauma. Like, your trauma left unhealed is really just going to be passed down to your kids, either through autoimmune diseases or fear or, you know, many, many other, like, real, real problems, or you're acting out on them and you're taking it out on them. Like, this trauma doesn't go anywhere. And so I don't have any, like, animosity or regrets about anything that happened like that. I do think that, like, a little more help would have been nice on one. And I'm very careful about this because, like, I am very financially successful, and I think that you have to teach teenagers independence and responsibility. But the level of responsibility that I've had to have when I was suffering so bad with these panic attacks and just didn't feel that there was anybody that could help me, that wasn't something that I would wish on people. But you know what? In the same hand, I'm a very generous person. And I really, really like to take care of people financially. You know, if you ask me for a few $100 tomorrow, like, I'll give it to you, you know. Mm. And please, everyone, don't email me about this. But, you know, I mean, that's kind of how I try to approach the world. I trust people. When we get work done in our house, I'm fine leaving people alone in my home. I think 99.9% of the world is good people. And And I'd like to be a lot more generous because of it, because I know how it's made me feel when I've come across somebody that's been extremely generous to me. But at the end of it, I mean, I just wish there was more healing. I wish there was less resistance to healing. And so many people are just, they think that their trauma is, I just don't want to talk about it. And they think that it's not going anywhere. It's going somewhere. It is 1,000% going somewhere.
Do you find a lot of people resist healing? I always wonder, do they not know that there's a problem, or are they resisting the problem? My question is, like, just a boring white dude my whole life, is why I was so stubborn to actually be open to my feelings. It took me over 20 years to even look back at things that had happened through a different lens. And I don't know, are people stubborn? Well, why is it so darn difficult when on paper it makes sense? And if it can transform your life, why wouldn't you just do it? But the process to actually take action feels so much like a bigger leap than it needs to, I feel like.
I love this question. And I mean, I can say from my own experience, like, I'm going to take this one direction and go somewhere else in a second. But, like, cool. I mean, I remember, like, 5 years ago, somebody, like a mentor of mine, gave me this, like, huge questionnaire, like, fill all this stuff out. Mm. I did it all. I was fine putting it there, but I didn't really know what to do with it. Like, okay, cool. Like, you know, I still believe the world is scarce. Actually, on that document, what I said was I want to help men heal their trauma and learn to be vulnerable. That's what I put on. I remember being in the cabin in Lake Arrowhead in California with my partner over COVID. So probably maybe 4 years ago, I remember doing that and, like, okay, cool. Like, tuck that away. And like, I think that a lot of us don't know that there is an option. I believe, and I think this is what happens with healing. You learn that everything is a choice. And that's like getting out of the victim mentality. So many people think, well, I have no choice. Like, you know, my partner, he always gets mad at night and throws something along. I'm going to cross the house. I have to just deal with it. I have no choice. You have a choice. It's a hard choice, though. And I think that so many of us don't know they have a choice. And that is by no, that is with a, the utmost of compassion, I say that, because I think that so many of us don't know we have a choice and there's no way for them to know. So there is one way that I found, and that is exposing yourself to other people's stories. I'm a huge reader. I listen to so many podcasts. I'm kind of blessed with, like, I can listen to them on 2x speed. I'll rewind once in a while if I have to. But I mean, I listen to 10 podcasts a day. Wow. I read a book a week. Even like the real good stories, the Martin Scorsese type movies, like these have real lessons in them that like you can glean education from. And like, if you're willing to open yourself up to like other people's stories, everything everybody's going through, someone's been through it before. Like, there are millions of people before me that have been in the same situation. And the way that I've seen to get out of my situation is by reading their stories and learning that I can do that too.
I think that's profound. I'm paraphrasing, but one thing I heard is, you know, foolish people don't learn from their mistakes. Smart people learn from their mistakes. And the wisest of people learn from other people's mistakes. Now, I think myself and most people end up landing in the smart category, where they have to make mistakes and learn the hard way. But truly, what you're saying is, by listening to these podcasts, by reading these books, by understanding these stories, you're developing the wisdom where you don't actually have to go through their storyline to get to the answer they were, like, you don't have to make their mistakes, or you don't have to do the hard work to find the answer. That's one thing I think is beautiful in books, is someone spends 30 years trying to figure life out, and then they give it to you in 3 pages, 300 pages. But oftentimes it can be said in just a few words.
I love that. And I've heard that exact phrasing somewhere before. Yeah. I mean, I think the wisest people, you know, taking the emotional health part of this out, it's just smart. I mean, if you run a business, why are you making mistakes that you don't have to make? You know, learn from a mistake. And at the risk of sounding like arrogant, like, I think I'm pretty wise. I mean, in that department, I don't make a lot of mistakes in life or business anymore. I have, but especially in business, like, there's so many people out there that have free wisdom, or, you know, pay $100 for someone to give you some advice for 10 minutes, you know, ask the question for free. People will save you a lot of mistakes, but this goes deeper. I mean, it's a narcissism. A lot of people don't want advice. That was one of the things my coach said to me. I'll never forget this. I said something to her, and she was, you know, she's a wise woman. She's a professor at NYU now also, and has a PhD. And, you know, I remember when she said to me something, she was like, I like working with you because you actually listen to what I'm saying. I'm like her lowest paying client by a long shot. And she's like, I work with all these, like, you know, companies, their corporation pays for it. And you know, they don't take it as seriously as you do. And I was like, who wouldn't want help? And she's like, Matt, most people don't want feedback. And I was like, oh my God, like huge light bulb moment. So if most people, like, that's kind of what I lean into in life right now. If most people aren't doing something, let me do it. You know, like, right now, like, I'm really venturing into this new phase of my career, my professional life, helping people, trying to build a business around this. Like, you know, most people are afraid to look stupid. Well, I'm okay looking stupid. Look at my first couple of reels on Instagram. You know, most people can't even do that. I mean, look at the first 100 reels on Instagram, you know, and you just keep going and you keep doing things. Most people give up. Like, and really, if you can just not give up, if you can, as my coach said, if you can just like take feedback when most people don't want it, there's your recipe for success. I am like not the smartest person in the room at all. I just think I'm the most coachable.
I think that's wise. That's brilliant. And I know from experience being the mentee and the mentor that a wise teacher loves a good student. just in the fact that you're implementing what you're learning is going to build that relationship, and both of you are going to get more value out of the relationship. This is something I'm on a soapbox right now, but this is something I didn't know back in the day, but literally just being more intentional when I do something. Like if I'm going to try something, I don't half-ass it. And when I don't half-ass it, I do a better job. And then when I do a better job, the person that gave it to me, whether or not I was successful or not, is more impressed with what I did. And then they give me more responsibility. It's really that simple. Does it have to be complicated?
No, that's it. I mean, it's people overcomplicate things. I mean, I have a bachelor's degree, and I wanted to go back and get my master's and stuff like and further education, but there's such an undervalue placed on like the simplicities of life, being generous. Like when I started my business, I literally everybody that gave me this is my best advice to anybody in the world. And again, nobody does this. So like when I started my business and like needed favors, I needed help from people. And you know, it's people that didn't want to get paid for it. They were, you know, friends doing favors for me. I sent every single one of them a gift. Like even like the rich people that didn't need something, you go buy like a hand crocheted scarf or something that's homemade, you know? And I, you know, over the past like 7 years doing this, I've maybe done 30 favors for people like this, like really giving them, you know, $2,000 of advice for free. I can count the time on one hand that I've even got a thank you email. I mean, literally, it wouldn't even be a whole hand. And maybe one Starbucks card or something like that. I'm not doing it to get something back, but like, if I'm asked to do it again after not even getting a thank you email, I'm not doing it again. And so being generous, I mean, just like these books, these $20 books, they have so much wisdom, and we overcomplicate it, you know, like these podcasts, there's millions of podcasts of people who are giving all this free information away. Just take one thing a day, do what I said, you know, send somebody a gift that does something nice to you. You made a friend for life. I promise you it'll be way more valuable than that $50 bouquet of flowers or whatever. Lots of wisdom that is wasted. Or that goes by.
You do it well. I mean, you just set the stage that if that's the case, that people are out there doing good things, but they're not getting the thank you letter, they're not getting the gift, they're not getting the easiest thing is just a quick word of affirmation through an email, through, again, you can write it on a letter, but a quick $1 or 30 seconds of your time to send someone a text. If a lot of people aren't doing it, what's going to happen when you're the person that does it?
You are going to stand out in the crowd. Even like hiring people
simple.
Right now.
Yeah.
I don't even get thank you letters hiring people. I mean, like when you interview people, I mean, maybe I'm old fashioned. I'm 40. I mean, but we always were told to send thank you letters. I mean, a thank you email. I can count the time on maybe, I mean, I've got, you know, 10% of the candidates I interview, I get a thank you letter for these days. Like, I've learned to not expect that, but if somebody sends it, I sure as heck move them to the top of the list.
And it's as simple as just a follow-up. But it's not a, let me pinpoint this and tell me if this is correct. They're not following up to say, hey, just following up if I got this job. They're actually, it's a follow-up, but they're following up to say, really grateful and appreciative for this opportunity. Let me know if there's anything I can answer, any other way I can serve you. So it's not following up to be like, hey, did you hire me? It's literally just giving the gift of gratitude.
And it's actually funny you say that because I just interviewed somebody recently and I did get that email. Hey, so wondering if you made a decision yet.
How'd it go?
They didn't get the job. They didn't get the, I mean, for more reasons than that.
Sure.
But no, it's to get the gratitude, but it's also like, hey, like I enjoyed our conversation. Here are the reasons why I think that I'm a good candidate, or this is what you said, that just something to show that you were paying attention. It's really to stand out. You know, you might have interviewed very well, but it's like taking that just a step further. I'm sitting here telling you I've interviewed 200 people for jobs over the past 7 years. I've gotten, I don't know, 6 thank you letters, we'll say. Why wouldn't you take the 3 minutes to send the thank you letter and just get to the top of the pile? And just to stand out, just to show that you care, to show that you, you know, I mean, I think like customer experience in any sort of business, like, again, call me old school, but like, you got to take care of people. Like, you know, I go to a restaurant, like I cook at home a lot, but like, if I go to a restaurant, like the customer service, it's part of the experience for me at this point. Like, and if you're trying to change the world, if you're trying to do something excellent and charge a premium for it, your customer service has to be a little better than average. And that's where the thank you card comes into, or the thank you email comes into play.
Give me a couple more of the essentials. You kind of hinted that there's these simple little things. They're simple laws. Give us another law that seems to get unnoticed.
It's the service, and I heard you talk about this a couple podcasts ago, but like, you know, as I'm out here trying to build my business and get exposure to what I'm doing, like every single person that's giving me their time, their airspace, thank you, Ben, by the way, you know, I hope I can do something for you that's going to return the favor. And I know you're not doing it for the favor, but we all need help. Like it's like the law of reciprocity. And I think some people just don't even, it's like a wiring of the brain. A lot of people don't really even think about that. Like, you know, it's like the person that goes to like all the free yoga studios around town and it's like, just pay. I mean, these yoga studios would be out of business if nobody paid more than the $20 for a free month or whatever. Hmm. Like you need to dig a little deeper and think about the mechanics of how the business actually runs. And like, Ben, you can't be giving all these people airtime and not getting help on your end too, you know? And people just don't think that way. So the law of reciprocity and, I would say like, I'm going to turn this to like the health area, like take care of yourself, you know, taking care of yourself. Like it doesn't have to be that crazy either, but eating vegetables, drinking a lot of water, going for a walk. These are the most basic things that you could do to really set your body up for success. And it's not a comparison, but it's just like you're doing better than probably 90% of the people. You might live longer than 90% of the people if you do these things. If you want to take it up a step, then meditate for 2 or 3 minutes. Maybe go running for a second. And these things matter.
I'm laughing because I'm imagining running for a second. Well, that's quite the sprint. No, you're spot on though. And I appreciate how gracious you are. Like we communicated a bunch before this interview. I get a ton of cold pitches that are literally like my laptop. I can't even read it all. You have to scroll because it's a brick of text. And my least favorite ones are the ones when they clearly pretend like they listen to the show, like, oh, been listening to the show, such a big fan. Just go into this long, cold pitch. Like if you were truly listening to the show, you wouldn't open with that and go into this long, crazy, cold pitch. But one thing I do when I'm getting on shows that I recommend people is I'll send like two sentences, like love the show for this reason. Mm-hmm. Was curious if you're even possibly open to guest requests. You know, transparently, I'd love to be considered, or I can open my network to you. Now, a little more refined than that, but it's, hey, I love the show. Curious if you even have opportunities. And if I'm not a good fit, I can find you someone who is. And again, it's that give first, that reciprocal mentality, that person that sends me this long-winded self-serving pitch, I read that as I want to use you and your show. Now, they might not want to use me. They might be the greatest person on earth, but that message reads in my head as I want to use you. You have a platform I want to be on, and in the worst case scenarios, they come on and then they ghost you. And then it's like they used you for what they wanted. It was like a blind date, like one night stand kind of thing. And again, I'm on a soapbox today because I like you, Matt. But at the end of the day, it's like sending that short, concise, give first message or that give first follow up is always going to go better in a conversation than when if you come with me, how can you serve me? That's my opinion on it.
Absolutely. And, you know, being generous with somebody's time, you can't send an email like that. You know, I mean, it's your job as the sender or the outreacher, whatever we want to call it. It's your job to make this concise so somebody can read it on their iPhone at a stoplight. Mm. You know,
between the 1 minute run and the reading your iPhone at a stoplight, you're giving me a couple red flags, my friend. Why are you on your phone when you're driving? In the passenger seat, you mean, right?
Sure. I've been known to look at an email at a stoplight, but not while driving.
I do the same thing. I'm scrolling through podcasts.
There is a level of efficiency that I think that you need to have to be able to do what you and I are doing right now. And a long email like that, you can't read it. And it's interesting that you bring this up too, because like I've listened to, I don't know, probably 30 of your podcasts, and partly because I really connected with you before. I don't know that I would
Thank
be
you.
Doing that to everybody's. But you gotta like listen to more than one or two if you're trying to get, like you need to do your research. And for me, one of the things I'm most kind of like proud of myself for, like I go to the gym in the morning and I really use that time to do things like this. Like I'm on LinkedIn, I'm like doing my research while I'm working out. And it's completely changed the game working out, by the way, because this workout is like the best time of my day because I get to like feel good physically, but I'm also learning and multitask, you know. But
there's science behind the fact that when you're exercising, you retain information better. So if you're undistracted and it's just you, the movement that you've done before, so it's exercising in a movement that requires no brain power, actually gives you a higher capacity to understand the information you're retaining, which I just think is a brilliant add-in I want to throw in. That if you're exercising and listening to a podcast, you're going to retain that podcast better than almost any other circumstance other than sitting down and taking notes the entire time. I have no clue where you're going. Completely derailed it.
I don't know either. No, I think it really is like, you know, always learning. I heard this podcast yesterday I was listening to. This is a tiny bit harsh. It was some very successful, very, very wealthy entrepreneur. This was a little harsher than what I would say, but I don't disagree necessarily. He was like, you know, I'm like on the subway going home and I see people reading like a fiction novel. And he's like, this is time that you could be using to learn. And I thought that was interesting. I do read 95% nonfiction books and I'm learning, but I do enjoy a fiction book once every so often. But it's true. I mean, there's, you know, people that say they don't have time. There's time, you know, I mean, I do like to listen to my Taylor Swift while I'm driving sometimes. But I do. Sometimes I have to put her away and listen to my podcast because I'm trying to learn, you know, and we all have a lot of opportunities to learn. But there's this efficiency, you know, and you need to be like, you know, hanging out with people that are like you, and somebody that is sending an email like what you're talking about, that is just, you would never do that. Like, how is this person, I don't want to say benefit you, but yeah, I mean, we should all be benefiting each other. And I don't want that person as my friend probably, because to me, it shows they didn't listen to the podcast. Like but there's a numbers game. I mean, they might be more successful than you and I. They're sending out 10,000 emails like that and might get more successes. Who knows? It comes down to integrity and how you want to operate, and quality over quantity is how I like to live my life.
You're going to make some shots. Wayne Gretzky, you miss all the shots you don't make. You miss 100% of the shots you don't take or whatever. But I'll just use Steph Curry as an example, because he's one of the greatest shooters in the NBA that anyone's ever seen. If he couldn't make a shot, they would bench him. He's known for his precision. So a lot of people say like sales is a numbers game. You miss all the shots you don't take. That's kind of true, but what if you could just shoot at a higher rate? Then you could just be more efficient, or if you have the capacity to do high numbers, you'll have more opportunities. So is it a numbers game? Yeah. Do you miss every shot you don't take? Yeah. Well, why don't you just get better at shooting? And that's kind of what we're talking about. How can we do things with intention so we do it better? It's really simply put.
I think that most business or sales wisdom is going to probably support that. You know, I mean, it is a balance of both. But I mean, like I would say it's like marketing's job is to be casting the net wide and broad. And technology has allowed marketers to be a lot smarter about how they do that with technology, where it's not even as wide as it used to be. But like, I think that sales, when you're really high up the, I guess high up or really in the focus point, it is, you know, big corporations, you have one person calling on a massive account. You might have 10 people calling on a massive account. Mm. You know, you don't have, the bigger the opportunity, the more focus is needed, you know? So it's like most things in life, both, a little bit of both.
But yeah, someone's probably already thinking this, so this is for you. The one nuance I was thinking about is you also can't get good at X in this example with shooting. You can't get good at shooting without taking a lot of shots.
Yeah.
So you do have to put in the time, the numbers, make the calls, train, listen to podcasts, try again and again and again. But to think that you have to try hard, I think, is a misnomer. It's getting the right information so you can try just as hard but be more efficient with those outreach, with that time. And this is kind of a callback, but you mentioned Taylor Swift. Are you a Travis Kelce fan now?
I could not be much less of a sports person than I am. I'm not at all. No, I have no interest in sports like that. I'm a yogi. I run. I play tennis a few times. My partner said I'm really, really bad at that, but I'm willing to get back out there and try it. But not the sports guy over here. So,
fair enough. And this will come up after the Super Bowl, and I'm butchering it, but I saw like a meme talking about Taylor Swift in the Super Bowl, that she's going to be in like Beijing or something, and then she's going to have like she's going to gain like over 10 hours on her way back. So it's like she's in one place the night before the Super Bowl, but then she can make it to the Super Bowl early the next day because she gains like 12 hours on the flight. And it was this whole mechanics, and I'm like, I'm into it. Let's take pop music. Let's take, you know, sports. Let's intertwine them. I'm into it. So I'm on a tangent today. Look what I'm doing, my friend.
You're good. No, Taylor Swift is kind of, it's interesting. I'm not that much of a pop music fan, so I'm still kind of evaluating how she's appealed to me. But I mean, I think I'm really attracted to people's business sense. Somebody said to me the other day that, like, it's really, you know, kind of going back to what we said about adversity, you know, I mean, I don't want to get into a whole debate about this. I don't really have an opinion about it, but the fact was that she was upset about her master's being sold. And somebody was saying this, that, you know, she could have taken that and she could have been the victim and not done anything about it that was productive. Instead, she became arguably probably the most wealthiest musician ever to walk the face of the earth because of it. So she, you know, her mindset really rendered her incredible results. And I'm not really that emotionally attached to her. I do like her music, but I just thought that was really interesting. But I do find myself really enamored by like celebrities like that, that just like, I mean, she's like more famous than Elton John, you know?
It's like veering into the cult area, that her super fans, some of the Swifties, it's like she's the second coming of some deity. She's so popular. Hats off to her. I don't like the limelight. I shrink sometimes.
I hear you. I probably won't be going to a concert. It's, I don't know, too crowded for my taste.
And oh, yeah.
I'd rather do something else with my $1,000 or whatever it costs. But yeah.
Let's talk favorites. So we talked about music, we talked about books, we talked about podcasts. We'll start with music. What are you listening to? I'm going to add this to the show notes, the recommendations of the day.
So I am a pretty mixed bag. I would say that you're probably going to laugh a little bit, but like, I think that in 2022, Spotify said I was like in the top 0.1% of Drake listeners.
Okay.
But all of Spotify. And I wasn't quite as high this past year, but Nicki Minaj, I think I was up there with her. I really like the lyrics, you know, I mean, I like people's lyrics, and I think Drake and Nicki Minaj for sure. And then I think Taylor Swift this year was up there. Adele, my partner and I listened to Adele 30 every night at dinner. I said to him the other night, like, when are we going to stop listening to this? I like it still. but I like a lot of hip hop. Like you would find me listening to like old school hip hop, like, you know, of course, like Notorious B.I.G. and stuff, but even like older, like Bay Area hip hop stuff, New York, Brooklyn hip hop. I like
classics.
I like classic rock a lot as well, too. A lot, like the Eagles, but even like Pink Floyd and Fleetwood Mac, but Steely Dan, that kind of stuff. So quite the mixed bag. I don't know how this happened, but it has. How about you?
Box of chocolates. Like I could talk all day about music. I got one question, because Drake, I could say definitely some of the songs are kick-ass lyrically. Adele, 1,000,000%. Did you say you like Nicki Minaj's lyrics?
I like Nicki Minaj's old lyrics, I would say. My friend just texted me, you think it was yesterday, he was like, ooh, like the new, her song Bigfoot that came out yesterday, it's not quite what the old Nicki Minaj used to do, so.
Fair enough. I can't get WAP out of my head right now. I'm like, that is not an eloquent song.
No, I'm like, rewind 10 years, rewind 15 years or whatever. It's been a while. But yeah, the most recent stuff is not my stuff at all. So I hear you.
I will answer your question. I'm like you. I'm all over the place. I started podcasting in 2016 with a music podcast that was, most of the listeners, they probably already know this, but it was a music show called Rochester Groovecast, and it was Rochester, New York music. Because at a very young age, what first got me into music, weirdly enough, was Weird Al Yankovic. I think it went Backstreet Boys to Weird Al Yankovic, where I was very young. And then it went to like hair metal, where I was listening to like Motley Crue, Def Leppard, Poison. That grandfathered into like metal, where I was listening to like heavier stuff, even like Slayer. I was listening to a lot like hardcore music, and I was all angry and angsty playing Grand Theft Auto. And then I chilled out a little bit and went from heavy metal to reggae, where I was listening to like Sublime and 311. Then it grandfathered into Rochester, New York, where we have a big reggae scene. So a lot of local bands I love. We have a big folk music scene. So I was listening to like the Grateful Dead, and I was listening to like folk and string music. Nowadays, Billy Strings is huge. And it's like, I'm all over the place. I'll put on the heaviest thing you've ever heard, and then I'll put on the softest thing you ever heard, and my expression will be exactly the same. Like, I like it all, and I'm a nerd, and I appreciate you bringing the question back on me, because I don't think I've went that route on the podcast before. But to send it back on you, now we're going to do music, podcasts, and books. Podcasts. Don't say mine, because it's overrated. What podcasts are you listening to? Like, what are the actual best ones?
Oh, gosh. Tim Ferriss is probably up there. It's funny because his podcasts are so long. There was a 4-hour one the other day that I was like, ugh. And I listened to it, and like life-changing information on that podcast.
Tim Ferriss wrote the 4-hour work week, and now he does the 4-hour podcasts.
Yeah, he's incredible. I mean, he's just such an amazing guy.
Yeah.
Randomly, like, I kind of am into Armchair Expert with Dax Shepard. I'm kind of surprised that I like that so much, but I do. Quite a bit. I like them a lot. And so how I found them both was actually a Brené Brown podcast. She interviewed them both, and they both revealed their childhood sexual abuse together on, Tim Ferriss had mentioned it on a different podcast, and then Brené Brown interviewed them both together, and I found them both at the same time. I'm a huge Glennon Doyle fan. I'm writing a book. I don't know if I mentioned that. And I've been doing that for the past 3 years, which has been a huge part of my healing journey. And Glennon Doyle, do you know who she is?
I don't.
Okay, so she's written 3 memoirs, and just such a phenomenal woman. And she's just taken us through her messy life and normalized it. And it's really, she's been my North Star in this whole project, honestly. And just letting me, like Brené Brown showed me that I had shame. And then Glennon Doyle showed me how to live with shame, and you just live with it. And you know, Glennon Doyle said this. She said, I'm so shameless. I'm so shameless. What did she say? Something about like, I'm so shameless. I'm concerned about how little shame I have or something.
Yeah.
but she's like a great mom. You know, she teaches people that like, you're never going to be a perfect mom. You apologize when you're wrong. Anyways, I love her podcast. She's married to Abby Wambach, the soccer player.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah.
This is so deep in the rabbit hole, but Abby Wambach went to Mercy School, played soccer. It's literally like Mercy's like a 2-minute walk from the house I grew up in. Yeah, so she's a hometown girl. I didn't know who she was, but she was playing soccer like a soccer field away from me. And I had no clue she would be a sensation. It's pretty cool. Yes.
She's really cool. I mean, she's very vulnerable as well. I mean, my superpower is this vulnerability. So I'm really attracted to people who have it. I mean, I think everyone I mentioned has like Tim and Dax and Abby and Glennon. They're all super vulnerable. I listen to The Daily every day. I'm like The Daily. It's my source of news. I like that. Jenna Kutcher. I listen to her a lot. Esther Perel. I like her as well.
Yeah.
There's quite a few. I mean, I have probably a list of like 25 that I try to sort through now, but those are a few.
I wish we were in person. A fun thing you can do is you just pull up your, you know, Apple or your podcast app and just scroll through each other's subscriptions. Great way to get recommendations, because there's a ton that you don't even think about sometimes, and you scroll through, and like looking at a bookshelf. So let's ask that bookshelf. Give me 3 books on your bookshelf that it would hurt to give away because you love it. But that being said, it would actually be pretty easy to give it away because you'd purchase it in an instance. So give me a book that you wouldn't be afraid to give away because you would just buy a new one.
A book that I would not be afraid because I would just buy a new one. I would say Glennon Doyle, Untamed, would be one of them. The other one, Joan Didion. On my journey writing this book with my writing coach, I discovered I love Joan Didion. She's a phenomenal essayist, that literally legendary. And she wrote a book called The Year of Magical Thinking. I read, I don't know how many books she has, probably 15 or so, and I've read probably 12 of them. But The Year of Magical Thinking is probably my favorite. Her husband died and literally dropped dead in her living room while her daughter was in the hospital, like with a brain aneurysm like symptom. So she's dealing with that, and her husband dropped dead. And she wrote this beautiful book about the grief, and it's like magical thinking. I mean, it's a very hard process, and you can Google all this, but her daughter ended up dying a couple years later. And that book is called Blue Lights, and it's equally as fantastic. And can you imagine? Like, and Joan Didion was probably like maybe 55 or so when she lost her husband, maybe 57. And this is a rough estimate, not exact.
Yeah.
She lived to be, I think it was 87. She just died 2021, I believe. So I love her very much. And she's really been an inspiration to me as I'm writing my book.
Yeah, you're the writing third, a book.
Yes. The third book. What do I have on my desk right here? You know what? I'm going to say this one. Building a story
Donald
brand.
Miller, story brand.
This just found its way to me like a few days ago, and I am like page turner. Everyone who will listen, I'm telling them how good it is. So
I have friends that are facilitators for story brand. I haven't read it, but anyone who's into the work is a huge advocate for it and says it works. So
it's massively helpful. Like, I don't know how anyone tries to start a brand without this. Or, I mean, this
they, they do it the hard way, like me. We already talked about that, though.
You know, this wisdom's available elsewhere. You are doing this. You know, it's just that it's concisely put in this book. So those are the three, I would say.
And your book, what are you writing about?
It's not what am I yet, writing? No. So this is interesting. I mean, I am, I never would have thought that I'd be an artist. I mean, I guess I would categorize myself as an artist now, which is humbling. It's almost like I could cry about it if I wanted to right now, because I just never thought that this was in the cards for me. And with my somatic therapist, like getting into my body, and that's what somatic therapy is. It's really getting into your body, tapping in that wisdom to help you understand things about your life that you can't understand. Very oversimplification of it.
Sure.
But she asked me, you know, what do you want to do or something? And I was like, well, I've always wanted to write a book. And then I asked her, do you have a writing coach I could talk with? And she did. And so I started this book. This book has been like, it might be the most important part of my healing journey. I guess I'm not really like talking about it. I mean, I'm happy to talk about it now, but I don't really think about it so much because it's not done yet. Mm. But I've written, you know, 2,000 pages, and I've chronicled this whole journey that I went on after my parents and I stopped talking and during COVID. And my writing coach, I mean, she's almost more of a therapist at this point, just really helped me make sense of my story. And the challenge is I didn't really pay attention in English and writing classes when I was in school. So right. I am having to learn to write, and I'm getting there. I feel good about, I will get there. The book is about 3/4 done, like put together. I know what's happening. I know what goes where. There is some sharpening that needs to be done, but really it's a book that it takes you from, it starts off with me on the freeway having these panic attacks and then taking the reader through my journey. And it ends with this profound self-love. I think, I hope it's okay to say this. I hope I'm not going to be in trouble by some publisher for like letting the cat out of the bag, but it really was marked by a few things. First, like my doctor, my primary care physician, he's like the greatest guy ever. He spends way more time than the average doctor with the patient and always does these behavioral medical assessments. So every time, all right, you know, Matt, what's going on? You know, you're not doing great. And then finally he's like, what's wrong? Like, this is perfect. What happened? And just without thinking, I was like, I love myself now. And he like looked at me, he's like, well, imagine if you could bottle that up and sell it, that's worth $1 billion. And then that wasn't like necessarily, like that was just kind of a marker. But my partner and I, we bought a house, like a very, very nice, and we had a house, but we bought a very, very nice house here in Hancock Park in LA. And that was a really big step for me to do this for myself, to realize that we had the financial means to do this, because I was kind of like, my parents, save for, you know, save for tomorrow, save for Armageddon. And I didn't really know how to enjoy the money that I had. And so we did this. And the book kind of like takes us from those panic attacks to like to me giving myself what I deserve and need and love and loving myself. And just really, I hope the reader gleans a lot of value from it. Just like my story is, there's a lot of people out there with stories like mine that are just skating just north of rock bottom, and sure, things never get quite bad enough to where they have to really heal. And therefore they never get to experience the joy that I have right now, the confidence I have, not arrogance, to be clear. I still struggle. I mean, every day, like the rest of us, but it's just confidence, like knowing that I'll be okay. And more than that, if I'm not okay, that's okay too. You know, it's, your job is to enjoy life right now while also saving for the future a bit. But the goal is that, like, if you die, whether it be at 30 or 70 or 110, to not have too many regrets. Mm. And I feel like, I think that's what happened, like with COVID. COVID was like crazy for me. I was like number one rule follower. I still don't quite understand the whole situation for me, but like, I really was not okay, like putting myself at risk at all. And the best way that I understand it was like, I started to see that I hadn't been living my life, and I did not want to die from COVID because I was finally starting to live it. Where like my other friends, my partner, not that anyone wants to die from COVID, but he was like, he's lived his life. He's been living authentically his life, and I hadn't been. So I'm not sure how I got on that tangent exactly, but the book really chronicles that.
We're going to have you come back when the book comes out.
I would love that. I'm excited. I just made a step this morning, and I signed up for a proposal, a book proposal workshop. Oh. Not that there was any my word of the year this year is results. And my word, like last year, I did my best. And I think that's great to have years where you do your best. And this year, when I say results, it's just doing my best, but being more strategic. And so I think like what I need, it's like I've been building this ship and not really sure what it would look like, where now I need to like say what it's going to look like and then complete the rest of it based off of what it's supposed to look like. So
we're hitting the dock. We're going to, what's the term for it? We're going to dock the ship.
Oh, land, man. The plane.
Land the plane. But I'm talking about ships. I joked to you before we started that you're my first call of the day, and my girlfriend, love her to death, but she's been coughing on me for 30 days. We can't quite get rid of this cough. I think I'm starting to get loopy from it. So I'm landing the plane. I'm sinking the ship is what it sounds like right now. Literally.
I'm dropping the anchor.
Oh, I'm dropping the anchor. We're going to drop the anchor. And I want to make a connection. Tell me if it's there or not, but I think it's beautiful that you're starting a mastermind community, because in all the stories and the insights you provided, you not once said that you like gritted your way through it and you did it alone and it was your own like stubbornness that like every single situation had someone, a peer, a friend, a mentor assisting you in one way or another. And you do that for people as well in your career. You've been assisting your clients, you're assisting, you know, people to this day. So talk about that, because I kind of noticed that it was never like, hey, listen to how cool Matt is. It's always like, hey, listen to this person that said this, or this book that I read, or this person that was there when I needed them, or this person that wasn't there when I was needed them. So yeah, am I touching on something that's true? It just seems like community and helping one another is just essential in everything you do.
I love that you made that connection. And yeah, I mean, I would say that with this, like there are different right answers, I would say. Some people might say that they did it themselves a little more than I might. And I think maybe they did do it themselves a little more than I might. I don't know. But my gift, or how I saved myself, I would say, how I kept my ship afloat, using the boat analogy, was I was never adverse to getting help. I was always very vulnerable. I remember being as a child, like talking to my grandma about like just very open and honest things. And she always, she passed away, whatever, you know, 13 years ago, probably, or 10 years ago, 12 years ago. And I still remember that, like talking to her about these like stupid things, you know, and like, oh, like, and she always supported me on that. And yeah, this journey of entrepreneurship, I mean, I wouldn't say that it's anything to celebrate that I got obliterated drunk, you know, to like survive some of this. I don't think that's really sure, I did it myself. I got myself on a plane to go fly to China to figure out Chinese business with an American company, you know? Maybe I shouldn't say obliterated drunk. That's an overstatement. But like, I don't really think it's a celebration that I did things alone. I don't think doing things alone is the answer. I think because I'm so used to doing things alone, I am so anti doing things alone these days, where I think the magic happens when you let people in. And really, like, I had my coach, I had the yoga teacher, I had my somatic therapist, there's a woman in my business who, she just really, really showed her care to me in a massive way. I have another friend who's like a retired doctor. I had these mentors, but they weren't really like business mentors only. They were emotional mentors, and they really like supported me when I was at my worse. And I paid for some help. I had my therapist. And no, I mean, I don't think I did it alone. And I think, you know, I was saying this to you earlier, Ben, and this is kind of like I hope this is okay to say, but like, I don't think businesses fail because of inaptitude. I don't think that there's like, look at like, you know, didn't Elon Musk yesterday say they like transplanted a brain or something like that? I think I spread something like that. Maybe I'm wrong, but there's something like,
I believe science,
like science proves that like you can do anything. You need to get the right help. You need to have the right support system in place. And whether that's mental support, emotional support, or whether it's, you know, skills, asking for help with skills that you don't know, marketing, picking up this book, calling Donald Miller or whatever. You know, I was listening to a podcast the other day that they said, I think it might've been a Tim Ferriss podcast actually, where he was like, the best way to get help, find the person on LinkedIn that you want to talk to, like someone high up, and offer them $1,000 for an hour. You're probably going to, most people will do an hour work for $1,000. Like even really like wealthy people will do it for $1,000. Like that's enough money to, it's a really nice dinner somewhere. I've asked for help. I've asked for help along the way and I've let help in. Maybe I didn't ask for it. Now I ask for it, but I've let help in. So I'm making this mastermind community. I'm looking to really help entrepreneurs, not people that have all the confidence already. It's not for that. It's for people that don't know their worth, that don't know the value they're bringing to an organization, or they don't know the value of their product. They don't understand that marketing, it's about perceived value too. Like you need to be charging enough so you can grow your brand's equity. You need to be charging enough to cover the costs and not just barely above your insanity. You need to be finding a way to structure this business where you can actually have that sanity and work hopefully far less than 40 hours a week. Like you should be doing the very, very top end of the funnel of these like high caliber activities. You should not be answering phones or doing admin work. At the beginning, yes, we do a little bit of that, but my mastermind is really helping entrepreneurs see that and learning their value, charge appropriately, and set boundaries, get rid of clients that don't make sense for them. Compassionate, I call it compassionate leadership, holding people accountable compassionately. My story about that was that I thought everyone was hardworking and like A-plus employees, and I had to learn that not everyone does that the way that I thought. And you have to manage people sometimes, but doing it compassionately and the mastermind helps people hire the right employees. And we're doing it in the community and I think it's just all about community. You know, like nothing good happens on your own like this. So
it's peer to peer, friend to friend, coach to coach, team member to team member, entrepreneur to entrepreneur. Well, what's the name again and how do people find it?
Yeah, it's called the Abundance Activation Mastermind. I am all about abundance. I believe that my life has been about attaining unapologetic abundance. I used to believe that the world was scarce, zero-sum game. If I was winning, somebody else was losing. There is more than enough for us all to have an abundant life. And it's not only financial abundance. I've made a lot of money. And I would tell you that my next step in life is to probably be okay. I mean, money is great. Don't get me wrong. I'm not going to say I don't want it. But the abundance is really emotional abundance. It's time abundance. My partner and I are starting our surrogacy journey right now. I want to be a present and good and emotionally available father. And I'm putting my own practices into place. I don't want to be working 40 hours a week. I don't want to work 30 hours a week, but I also, some of it, you know, some of it's not work. I mean, it like you need to find the stuff that's not work. There should be a lot of time you spend in your day doing things that don't feel like work that actually are work. Anyways, it's called the Abundance Activation Mastermind. And if you go to my website, mattgerlach.com, you can sign up for a free 30-minute call with me there. This is an ongoing mastermind. It'll be offered for years to come, hopefully. And I would love to talk to anybody who might have interest. So thanks, Ben.
Free 30-minute call.
Free 30-minute call.
Sweet. I took up a ton of your time, so I appreciate you gracing me and the listener today. It's a ton of fun. You got to get that book out. You got to get that published, pitched and published, so I can have you back. We can talk more. And again, I appreciate what you do. I think you're still on your way up, and that's a beautiful thing. I'm just excited to see where everything goes for you, Matt. And it blows my mind. You've already hit high levels, but you're just getting started, I feel like, right?
I feel the same. Thank you. And thank you for that. I mean, thank you for your time today. Thank everybody for everybody's time. Thank you all for your time right now. It's really means a lot to have you interested in my story. in my life. So I never thought this would be the case for me, that I'd be sharing my life publicly like this. And it feels really good to let people in. And hopefully you learn from my mistakes. Be wise. Learn from my mistakes.
We'll leave it at that. Be wise, everyone. Matt, talk soon.
Thank you.